Mr. Vic Buffery, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Buffery?
I was born in Paddington, London, in the Harrow Road, and I'm pleased to tell anybody that it was the fabulous Communist Party headquarters in 1924.
And the August 1924. And could you tell me a bit about your family background?
My father was the son of a shoemaker who ran a business in Kentish Town. I'm trying to think of the name of the road, but which I should know. My mother was the daughter of a man who was up, whose family were Austinites in Hampshire, and moved to Willesden, where he became a cab driver. My mother had two brothers and two sisters, one of whom died very early. My father, I don't know what he did then at that time, but I do know that my mother was a hairdresser, an apprentice hairdresser, which was, you know, quite a substantial position to be in, and she worked in the West End in fashion saloons. The brothers, her brothers, the eldest brother became a cab driver, as his father had become a motor taxi driver, and his brother or her brother ran a couple of lorries in the haulage business, and in fact, after the war, he was instrumental in helping to build Heathrow Airport with his fleet of lorries. My mother, as I said, she was apprenticed as a hairdresser, and very soon after I was born, certainly by 1926, we'd moved out to Ilford into the developing estate in Cranley Road. By that time, a sister had come along, and 1926, and they then set up a business in one of the new developed shopping parades, where they had the accommodation above the shop on two levels, and the shop itself was divided into two. One where my father set up as a master printer's business, and the other side set up as my mother's hairdressing saloon, which in fact to this day exists as a hairdressing saloon.
And so you were fairly comfortably off, or at least within...
Oh, I think so, yeah. I don't think we ever wanted for anything. In fact, whenever I asked my father for something, I always got much better than I expected. For example, when I went to college, I wanted a set of drawing instruments, and I'd seen one set in a shop in Ilford, and he went to the extent of purchasing the top range instrument set, which I still have, and I used in my professional career.
Now, what about your early education? We'll take that through.
Local education in the Ilford Borough Council primary school, and then into central school, because I failed to get into any technical college at that time, and eventually in 1939 I managed to get a place in the Polytechnic Regent Street in the Motor Body Building section of the craft schools.
Now, I think this will answer this question. Well, were there any particular subjects you were interested in or specialised in at school? Or was it just engineering? And
No engineering. No art, woodwork, failing tests, not being attentive, swearing. No, I don't think anything showed itself at that stage, but in the evenings I would entertain myself in the days before television, of course, where we would listen to the radio and I would have a drawing board, a small drawing board and crayons and draw ships and lorries and things of that sort. In fact, my uncle who ran this transport business had many copies of the commercial motor, and I would take those and copy the lorries, etc. So I suppose really drawing was a thing that crept in quietly in the background. I don't even remember doing very well at school in drawing, but I thought my woodwork was quite good though. And we liked swimming, my sister and I.
What about outside? Were you interested in sport or the Boy Scouts or anything like that?
Oh, I guess I joined the Scout. They're not Scouts, the Cubs, but I gave it up for some reason after a while. I took a fancy to rowing on the Park Lake. Sort of swimming, yeah, we like to swim. But other than that, we played football at school, but it was always a bit cold for me.
Now, you got into the Polytechnic.
Regent Street Polytechnic, which is now the University of Westminster, I think.
And you were studying?
Motor body engineering. Well, they call it motor body building, actually, because it was set up by the governors of the Regent Street Polytechnic as a means of giving students a practical background coupled with some theory. So essentially, a practical craft school where they taught hairdressing and tailoring, prelims for examination for the university for the United Kingdom, and motor building. And that was subdivided into private vehicles and buses and lorries and commercial vehicles.
Did you enjoy the studying or the work?
I liked that very much, yes, it was very good. Because the essence was to design and then make. And you got the rest of it, 3 hours, and we did French. No, we didn't do French, we did English, which is really literature, and not grammar. And I think the language came on later. However, the war was a bit of a nuisance because...
Do you remember the outbreak of war, the actual day war broke out?
The day war broke out, my dad said to me. Yes. My family liked to get away at the weekends to either a camping site, you know, within easy driving distance, or eventually they bought a chalet after the war and did the same. And they were business during the week, you see, so it was a relaxation for them. And at that time, because of the threatening nature of politics, they decided to go to a camping site which was up locally near Ungar. So the day war broke out, we were at this campsite.
Did you hear the radio broadcast?
Yes. Oh yes.
What did you and your family think? I mean, what did you think about it?
Well, I thought I think really that people had taken it in their stride because it had been working up since, must be 1938. a lot of people, politicians obviously knew something was happening long before that, but the general public became rather aware of it, because if you went into London at all, they were digging trenches in Hyde Park and sandbagging all the various building industry. So that's probably the peculiar thing about it, that nobody actually said, as far as I know, there's going to be a war. But everybody felt that they had to do something to make preparation for that occurrence, you see. So the other thing, of course, which was Anderson, who was the Home Secretary, had an easy assembly structure put into the ground called the Anderson Shelter, you see. So virtually everybody had one of those.
Did you have one? Yeah, yeah. Did you have any trouble with it? Because some people did have trouble with it flooding, basically.
No, I was very glad again that we had it too.
Do you remember how you put it up? Cause
no, I was at school, but I remember coming home one day and there it was in the garden. And evidently what my father didn't put it up, but you know, you had to dig out a good meter of soil, the object of which was to give you a lot of protection in the ground, and then cover the Anderson with the soil as a vast defence, you see. It was quite a good design, actually, I thought. No, we spent, during the war, as I was going to say, that my education was absent a little bit, because I couldn't find where the college had gone to. And I suppose it was part of the secrecy. And I nearly got sent away on an evacuation with a lot of suckling mothers, which I refused to tolerate, so I came back home again. And my father was most surprised and upset to feel that I hadn't gone away, you see. Anyway, I went to work in a local engineering factory.
So you left the college?
I didn't actually leave. I just did something in the meantime, you see. But I think my parents had been trying to find out where they'd gone to with the object of getting me going again. So I didn't actually go back to the college until November, by which time it had turned up at Winston in Somerset, which is south of Bristol.
So during that time, in the interval, you'd been working where?
I worked at a firm at Fairlock, I can't think of the name of it now, but it's a well-known engineering firm. Do you know if I used the word tap and dive, would you know what I mean? Well, if you make a hole and you want to put a thread in it, you use a tap. If you want to put a thread on the outside of a piece of rod, for example, to make a screw, you use a die. So that's the thing that makes the thread. Now, they made all sorts of things like that. And I spent most of my time in this factory, first of all, grinding off the faces of some of the dies that had been left as unsaleable. And of course, then, since they were perfectly durable, then you needed a bit of grinding on both sides to make them look polished. And then, and that's my job to do by hand. And you held the little button thing and you held it against the grinding. I mean, these days, HMS. No, it wouldn't stand an earthly. And then I went on to a tap making machine where instead of having three flutes, I managed to produce six. An automatic machine, you see, so something had gone wrong. But anyway, I lasted until November, from early September, at this firm. Lehman Archer and Lane, that's it. LEHMANN Archer and Lane, that was the name of the firm. Talk to people about in the engineering world and they know exactly what you're talking about.
And in November, you'd found out where the college had gone, or the Polytechnic had gone?
Yes, and my father, Hotch, shotted me back down to Winscombe by train, and I was put into a large house called Moose Hut in Minster, with about 30 other boys, where I spent most of the early part of the war.
Now, what was life like down there? You're away from your parents, or?
I was down there until March 42, I suppose, from November 39. I came back once or twice, on a holiday.
And so that's where you spent your late, you know, your late teens, or, you know, from 15 to 18, sort of?
Yes, early teens, yes. Yes.
And do you think you benefited from such intensive period at college with no distractions?
Oh, yes. I always feel very grateful that somehow they got me into that. Really, it was like being at university. And eventually I landed up as being a senior boy and head boy and that sort of thing. There was a modicum of progression, so you felt that you weren't just being passed by, you were part of the system.
And what was the qualification you got at the end of it?
I didn't get a qualification. Well, there should have been a city in guilds, but I think the system had gone haywire, and I had in fact spoken to the city in guilds about this, and there's no record.
So you just came to know. So you left in March 42?
Yeah.
And when you'd be about 18?
I took a job in the Admiralty, and the, well, I was 18 in August of that year.
So you're just rising it, yes, 17 and three quarters. Yeah. Now, how did you get a job at the Admiralty? What made you...
Well, if I go back a little bit, one of my interests was ships. In fact, it's always been ships. And I would take my bicycle when I was big enough, my bicycle was big enough, to ride down to the King George V West Indies dock and watch the ships go through the lock and watch the ships on the, against the walls being unloaded and that sort of thing. In other words, I just got in amongst ships and went back and forwards each time on the Woolwich ferry, and of course at that time the room was teeming with ships of all sorts of type size. So that was really my first interest in the ramification of my maritime interest.
And how did you get a place at the work at the Admiralty? And what was the work as?
My application, and I must have got one of the. Probably the head of the school to substantiate it.
And what was the work? What was your position?
Well, I was classed as Joint Office Assistant, non-established. You probably know what that means.
And you actually worked in the old Admiralty building?
I worked down in Bath. And it was quite interesting, really, because I went back with my sister who lives in Florida. Can I just go back a little bit? My father had been married previously to marry my mother, circa 1919, I suppose. And he had a daughter, Joan. And she partially lived with us, partially lived with her, with my father's sister. What I was going to say was that a few years ago, my sister came over for a holiday. She lived in Florida, and we went touring down the West Country, and we landed up in Bath. During the celebration that the Admiralty were having down there of the 50th year in which they had, from when they had moved in 1939. So that must have been 1989 when we went down there, you see. And, however, when I joined the Admiralty...
What buildings were they in Bath?
Oh, every building you could think of, everything. Do you know Bath at all? You do. Empire Hotel, by the gardens, that was full of Admiralty. The first place I worked at was the museum in Queen Square. Then there was an air raid. I think it was the only air raid they had in Bath. That would be, but it would be still March 1942. They had two nights, Friday and Saturday, in which a lot of buildings were damaged, and one of them was this Queen Square Museum. So we moved into the Pump Room Hotel, which was in just opposite the Pump Room. And I spent the rest of my time there.
What exactly were you doing?
I was
what were you drawing?
I had a drawing board, a large drawing board, double imperial board, and the task I had was to convert existing cable glands. So I just might, if you take a cable through a panel and part of the ship, and it's one of the watertight bulkheads, it has to be sealed. So what they do is to put a fitting in to the bulkhead, make sure that the fitting to the bulkhead is watertight, and then you pass a cable through and you squeeze up this thing and inject a compound in it which never goes hard, you see. So that's how they do it. Now, all of these things are designed to suit different particular cable sizes and the particular functional number of conductors. Now, when the Japanese invaded Malaya, the source of rubber dried up. I can't really believe that, but however, that's what I was told. And the object of my exercise was to reduce first of all, the cables with less rubber, something like 10% less rubber, and then produce a design for all the fittings to be reduced in proportion. And then the cables are carried on trays, cable trays, and they have to be redesigned, and so did the cable clips that held the cables in the cable. So it was really an overall view of what this meant. Now, I say design because, strictly speaking, I mean, I'm a bit of design work at college, but to come and do this in design was really a question of taking portions of existing products, which were provided as a matter of drawing information, and just taking percentages down. And then I suppose somebody somewhere was doing the technical side of it, putting all the dimensions on. But we were comparing. I had a large sheet of drawing paper, and I went and started in one corner with one gland, and I landed up in the bottom right-hand corner with the last one. And then we did all the cable clips, and I did that until I went into the Navy in December.
42.
42, yeah.
So you weren't in a restricted occupation at all?
I was, yeah.
So how come you got in the Navy?
Well, I said that I'd had enough of civil service.
Now, why was that? Why had you had enough? I mean, what?
No, that's all right. Well, I think it's a startling, well, certainly, when you think that there's a war going on, and the way in which the Admiralty did things is like an elephant tramping through grass looking for a mouse or something like that, you see. There didn't seem to be any impetus. And of course, I suppose all the people who I was working with, apart from one or two, were probably more, they'd all come back from having been retired.
So you just felt it was your job to volunteer?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. No, I thought that it was probably one thing would be to get out of the civil service. Because in those days, I was coming up for 18, so I knew that I've got to do something because I'm going to be forced to stay there. And so I'm either the with my boss that I wanted to go when the time came, and I chose to go into the Navy.
Now, that was because of your interest in ships?
Basically, I'd also applied, my father was upset, I'd applied to the Fleet Air Arm at Bristol to join. I don't know why it was the Fleet Air Arm, but, everybody was thinking about flying, it was the thing to get into, and since I was really interested in the sea and the ships, so I suppose that was the reason why I asked for the Fleet Air Arm, but I didn't get anywhere. I had to wait until I was called out.
Now, so how were you called up? What do you remember the whole call-up procedure? That was December, 42.
December. I was also part of the Home Guard.
Before we go into that, tell me about your Home Guard experiences. Sorry, I should have asked you about that.
Can I go back to the Polytechnic a bit? Because there are some interesting points there. During our time at Winscombe, we had Dunkirk, and just after the evacuation, or halfway through the evacuation, the Green Howards arrived in the village and took over all the spare accommodation that could be found. And, they turned up from Dunkirk, most of them lost most of their clothes, and some of them were just wearing the least they have given them. A waterproof ground sheet, didn't they, in the army, which you wore like a policeman used to wear, and that's all they had, no clothes, not even any boots on them. And the second thing was that I joined the Army Cadet Corps for the college. I'd done that when I joined the college in March or April.
Now, what do you remember of the Army Cadet Corps training?
Oh, well, maneuvers. We did all sorts of maneuvers up in the hills down there at the Mendips. And we always got mixed up in any military activity which wasn't secret or secure. And one thing we did was to go up onto the tops of the Mendips and build large caissons of stones on the areas where they felt that gliders could be landed, you see. And in fact, within the last 5 years, I've been down there and I've seen these stones exactly where we left them. You know, you wouldn't be surprised, 50 years ago, and they're still there. So nobody bothered to take them away. And the other thing was, of course, we used the uniform of the cadets on a Saturday to get a lift into Western Supermere to go to the cinema.
And then the Home Guard, when did you join them?
When I went to the Admiralty, you had to do some civil defence activity.
And what do you remember of your activities?
Not really. Actually, it wasn't quite as military as the Cadet Corps because after a while I'd been made a sergeant and that became a bit demanding and we were doing quite a lot of rifle shooting with them. There was a rifle range alongside our school hall, a 2-2 Morris 2 rifle range, which I seem to be up in amongst the top few in accuracy. I think it was good from the point of view of exercising a bit of authority and a bit of discipline, and getting involved in a sort of background way in the war and what things that people were doing for the war, and there was always some effort for the Air Force Hurricane Spitfire, he has Spitfire wigs and things like that.